From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the guns of the Alamo. Texas Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson explains why he's setting a new precedent for the historic site, allowing a pro-gun rally to be held. Texans head to the polls, 9 constitutional amendments to be decided, 2 of them would help veterans. And who's praising Texas now? Time magazine is calling Texas the future. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Saturday morning, hundreds of gun rights supporters are heading to the Alamo. They are gathering to protest the San Antonio Police Department's enforcement of disorderly conduct ordinance that has been used to ticket those who openly carry firearms in the city. The rally, billed as Come and Take It San Antonio, will be held on the 4.2-acre Alamo complex, which has been under the custodianship of the Texas General Land Office since 2011. This is the first time that a rally or protest has been allowed at the actual Alamo. There are innumerable Alamo political events, but these have always been held at the Alamo Plaza, which is across the street from the Alamo and on city property. The decision to allow the rally to be held on the Alamo was made by Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson, who is also running for Lieutenant Governor and will be giving the keynote speech at the Come and Take It rally.
I've been asked to speak there, and I think there's, you know, it's a rally promoting and advocating, Second Amendment rights, particularly open carry. And, you know, I'm anticipating a lot of folks there who are exercising a lawful right, and that they're going to behave in a very lawful manner, and we're going to have a good event. That's what I'm anticipating.
This is about the open carry of firearms in Texas. What is the law, and what is the issue?
Yeah, exactly. In Texas, the open carry of long guns, such as rifle and shotguns, is not prohibited. There have been some peace officers who apparently aren't aware of that and have arrested folks for openly carrying firearms, long guns, and under the premise of disorderly conduct or something like that. And, of course, those arrests that's not going to hold water under the law. And so these folks are just letting everybody know that in Texas you can carry a long gun openly and suffer no penalty as long as you do not do that in a manner to cause alarm. And that's the term in the law. You can't do so in a manner intended to cause alarm. So as long as you don't do that, you're not breaking any laws. And, of course, you know, Texas is a very pro-Second Amendment, pro-right-to-arms state. And, a lot of folks are taking great interest in this because they're not aware of the law. So I think it's a pretty routine event, and I think it's going to be a very educational event. And
the long arms and the being able to open carry, kind of generally in the past, it's been seen like this is a law that allows, hunters, you don't want to leave your weapons in the vehicle, hunting weapon, or not considered to be a very dangerous weapon, especially in the hands of people who have been trained and respect the weapons. But some people are concerned about using other, like a Bushmaster or weapons that it can become, automatically fired.
Well, they really, first of all, I'm not familiar with your premise. There is not a distinction in law. And Bushmaster automatically fired, that's not accurate. A Bushmaster, an AR-15, is a semi-automatic weapon that fires one bullet per trigger pull. And that's a common misconception among folks who are not very familiar with firearms, is that a firearm that looks like an assault weapon used by the armed forces, just because it looks like it, doesn't have the same functionality. So I suspect these gentlemen will be carrying, and ladies, they'll be carrying long guns of a variety, including the look-alike weapons that look macho or look threatening. But, you know, we really can't premise our rights upon the appearance of the weapon. And so folks who may be, somewhat taken aback need to understand that the Second Amendment and Article 1, Section 23 of the Texas Constitution, which provides the right to arms, has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with hunting. It has to do with the use of arms to defend oneself against a criminal element or an oppressive government. That's what it's about. Has nothing to do with hunting. And while, you know, basically what has happened is Texas used to be a very rural state. I think you kind of get on this point. I think maybe that's what you were thinking. Commonly, you'd see folks with rifles and shotguns in the back of their truck. Now, in rural areas, you'll see them with AR-15s because of the feral hog population and coyotes, and frankly, down on the border because of other types of two-legged coyotes, possibly, narco-traffickers and drug runners. But nonetheless, this is the law, and it permits this activity. And for us to just arbitrarily say, well, we don't like it or it makes us uncomfortable, is a very slippery slope about losing certain rights that we today enjoy. And I think that's what this is about. And you know, and I think you're right. I think where you're going, it is a little bit confrontational. But when people are arrested for openly carrying long guns, and that's not provided for in Texas law, then you need to be a little, maybe on the edge about that. And I would also, you know, the folks have said, well, is this appropriate at the Alamo? And they need to read the March 2nd, 1836 Declaration of Independence, where we enumerated the reasons for our separation from Mexico. In that document is a statement about Mexico has tried to take away our arms. So I would submit to some of the detractors that the folks who died defending the Alamo would be very supportive of a group of citizens supporting something that they died for.
So this is the first time that we're going to have an event like this actually on the Alamo grounds.
Let me interrupt you. You said political event. How is this a political event? I don't see anything political about this. Political is a campaign event, is a campaign fundraiser, is something about the election of a candidate for office. The premise that this is a political event is not supported, in my opinion.
You are running for lieutenant governor.
What does that have to do with anything? It's not my event. I'm a speaker, and I'm the number one proponent for Second Amendment rights in Texas, so it's only logical. Whether I was running, whether I had just been elected, whether I was in office or out of office, who are you going to ask to speak? You're going to ask the number one Second Amendment guy in Texas. So to say that this is a political event is false.
Okay, so let's just say this is not a political event, but this is a, let's call it a First Amendment, freedom of speech event supporting Second Amendment.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It is a First Amendment event as well. That's a good point.
Normally these things do not happen on the Alamo grounds itself, the actual Alamo grounds. They would typically happen right next to it on Alamo Plaza, which is owned by the city of San Antonio. And we've seen almost every day there's some sort of political event, event happening there.
Yeah, and you're correct. I mean, you're correct. Generally, this happens out on city property. And here's the issue that we have to be very cognizant of as a state and as a person who has responsibility, for state property. This is public property accessible to the public. And let's assume that I were to tell these folks, no. Well, then how would I enforce that if they showed up anyway? Are they trespassing? Can you trespass on public property when you're behaving in a lawful manner during the hours that property is open? It's just like the Texas Capitol, where rallies for different causes are held with great frequency. And some of those causes I would not be supportive of, but it is the people's property, and the people have a right to be there. Now, I think, you know, the follow-on, and this may be what you were thinking of, one of the problems is we do not have a written defensible policy about what can and can't happen at the Alamo. And we're going to have one now. This brought up something that we need to pay attention to. And the policy, as I envision it, and we're going to get a lot of input from a lot of people, no political events, no commercial events. There needs to be an application process where, you know, you can apply, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time, state your purpose, and then get a permit to do this. But we don't have that in place now. So if I were to tell these folks no, then how would I enforce that? Because it is public property. And that's a dilemma we face, and I think you make a good point.
The event on Saturday morning, it's anticipated that we're going to have about 1,000 participants. They will be with their weapons, because that's what it's all about. You want people to realize not to be alarmed by seeing folks who are carrying weapons, right?
Yes, I think that's accurate. I doubt that there'll be 1,000 people there, but there'll be quite a few people. You're right about that.
And they'll be marching to the police station and then back to Travis Park. Is it not intimidating to see, several hundred heavily armed people marching through the streets of downtown San Antonio? I mean, what kind of message is that?
Well, I think you've got a really good point there. There are folks who will go, what? And that's a very good point. But the fact that someone is intimidated is not a cause under the law. I have no right to be unintimidated or unalarmed. And these things will go away. These types of protests will go away when folks begin to recognize what the law says. It's kind of like telling your kid you can't do something. That just makes you more inclined to do it. So once this premise has become accepted and everybody understands that that is allowed under the law, I think these types of demonstrations will go away. But you're right, and I understand what you're saying, and there may be folks that look at that and say, what is going on here? That's one of the reasons that the San Antonio PD, when I talked to Chief McManus, they're going to have lots of officers there. We're going to have Alamo Rangers there so that the public sees that, hey, there's cops standing around here and nobody's doing anything. This must be okay. But you make a good point, and it's a valid point. I agree with you.
Now, many Texans, I think the majority of Texans, the vast majority of Texans, certainly support Second Amendment rights. And it seems, though, that when someone is a gun supporter, it gets a little bit of a challenge from folks who have questions, that their reaction just seems very over the top. I mean, no one is trying to take away anyone's weapons. There is no come and take it. No, we don't want to take anyone's weapons. So why does we have to go from 0 to 100 miles per hour instantly in having these dialogues?
Well, first, your first point, I think is a valid one. There are folks in this movement who have a tendency to get over the top. Anytime you have a large movement or a large group of people, there's going to be some folks in there who I guess I could describe as yahoos. But when you say that folks are not trying to restrict our arms, I disagree with that premise. When the city of San Antonio has an ordinance that says you can't have a loaded firearm in the city limits unless you're a police officer or a security guard, you can't say that people are not trying to take away our right to arms. The San Antonio ordinance says something similar to that. I don't have it. I can't recite it to you today. So the idea that there's no movement or there are no actions to take away the right to arms is false. And the city ordinance is a classic example of that. Were there not that city ordinance, I doubt we would have a rally like this.
And it's a peaceful rally, and you're going to be able to demonstrate that point. Nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, it's a peaceful rally that demonstrates that this is lawful under Texas law. Texas law says that municipalities cannot regulate firearms. The city of San Antonio, the council, and the mayor, and this could be a council and the mayor from some time ago. I'm not blaming the current council or the current mayor. They pass an ordinance that is unlawful and unconstitutional. But you make a good point, though, about there are folks who kind of get over the top. I agree with you on that one.
So is it okay if we deviate a little bit and talk about your campaign for Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, it's a different subject, by the way.
This is a different subject. Okay, everyone knows that now. You've come out strong against State Senator Dan Patrick, and you have called him out as lying about your record when he says that he is the only one who has opposed in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants. Can you talk about that some?
Well, it is a absolute fabrication, and it raises an issue that is a very, very difficult issue. And my point is, we need immigration reform. That needs to come from the United States Congress. And when we talk about in-state tuition, in my view, that is a Band-Aid measure. We need to find some way of addressing the legal status of the folks who came here when they were 2 years old, and who have grown up in Texas, who are Texans, and who wish to go to college. So at one time, there was a proposal in Congress, a DREAM Act, I think it was called, that would have provided a lawful status for these youngsters or young adults for military service or for public service. We need to come up with some way to make to eliminate the fact that these folks who came here through no fault of their own are here. It's not to eliminate that, but to give them some lawful status. I would support a DREAM Act for military service or public service and eliminate that prohibition or eliminate that provision that says that they are here unlawfully. But to do a, to say, well, in-state tuition for illegal aliens, that's not the way to do it. This needs to be done in a comprehensive manner from the federal government who regulates immigration. And but when Senator Patrick said that he's the only one to oppose in-state tuition, that's just false. And it came out of words out of his own mouth. He said in a debate that, you know, I understand that you're opposed to in-state tuition for illegal immigrants. And then a week later, he starts running an ad that says the opposite of that. It's not really about the issue. It is about saying things that are factually inaccurate in a TV spot. That's what the challenge is about. We need comprehensive immigration reform. The problem is the bill that's currently before Congress is not a good one. It is nothing more. It doesn't provide a guest worker program, and it's a full employment act for organized labor. It's not a good bill. We need a good bill. We need something to address the issue of those 12 million people who are here illegally.
David Dewhurst, the incumbent, he's taken a lot of criticism for how he handled Wendy Davis's filibuster. How would you have handled that night differently?
Well, I would have handled that night differently by passing the bill during the regular session and not waiting and not having it queued up on the last night of the special session, which allowed her to filibuster for 12 hours and kill the bill. During the regular session, the bill restricting abortion had a provision in it to say abortions after 20 weeks are unlawful. Virtually 70% of Texans support that provision. That provision was removed from the bill in the Senate, passed over to the House, and the House put it back in, and it came back for concurrence and House amendments. That was a mistake. That should not have, that 20-week provision should not have been stripped out during the regular session. If it had not been stripped out, the bill would have gone to the House. The House would have passed it. It would have gone to the governor for signature. It would have been signed, and we wouldn't have set this up for the filibuster in the special session. That's how I would have handled it differently.
Jerry Patterson is the Texas Land Commissioner, and he's running for the Republican nomination for Lieutenant Governor. Other candidates include incumbent David Dewhurst, Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples, and talk show host State Senator Dan Patrick. Patterson is giving the keynote speech at the pro-gun rally at the Alamo on Saturday. On Monday, Texans have the opportunity to begin voting for 9 constitutional amendments. Prop 6 is getting most of the attention that would take $2 billion from the Rainy Day Fund and use it for water development projects. But supporters of veterans would like to point out Prop 1 and 4. Texas Senator Leticia Vandepute, a Democrat from San Antonio, authored the legislation to get those props on the ballot.
I am very proud to have authored Proposition Number 1 and Proposition Number 4. Both of these propositions deal with our military veterans and homestead exemption property taxes. The first one came about with a conversation with our Gold Star spouses. These are the spouses of those, they're surviving spouses of those who are killed in action. And this proposition, if Texas voters approve it, would allow a property tax exemption for the surviving spouse of those who are killed in action. Very, very important, and we hope that it gets support.
This came about through a personal interaction. Can you kind of tell me more about that?
As chair of the Veteran Affairs and Military Installations Committee in the Texas Senate, I really have the opportunity to visit with service members and their families and veterans and their families really all over the state. And the reason I introduced the bill this past legislative session is because of an encounter that I had with a group of Gold Star spouses. Already in Texas law is the ability for a 100% disabled service-connected veteran to take that 100% property tax exemption on their homestead. And I was visiting with these spouses and met with a very young widow, and she had 3 small children. And she said to me, I would give anything for my husband to still be alive and to be 100% disabled. But I'm barely making it. And I'm having such a hard time. It just seems odd to me that if you survive a horrible battlefield injury and you're 100% disabled, the state of Texas kindly says thank you by making sure that you don't pay property taxes. She said, but for those of us who have paid the ultimate price, she said, we are the surviving spouses and we don't get that help. And I thought that was wrong. And so met with a bunch of different groups and veterans groups, and luckily we were able to pass the measure. And since it is a property tax exemption, the legislature does not have the authority to just vote that in. It really needs to go before the voters. So proposition number one this year would be to have 100% property tax exemption for the spouses of those who are killed in action.
Right. I guess it's only right that all of Texas has a voice in this because we're shifting the burden of that property tax to everyone else, so we need to at least have a say in that.
That's correct. And if you look at it, I think we figured out there's probably anywhere from 28 to about 32 people in the state that at this point would benefit from that. Many of our young soldiers who have given their lives on the combat field are not married. Of course, this would only apply to those Texans. In other words, they had to have entered service from the state of Texas. And we hope that we minimize any battlefield casualties. But what this recognizes is that for that spouse, if they've been living on base, it's the first home that they purchase. Of course, they need to remain unmarried, so that benefit would continue. But this is only a way to say thank you. And we hope that people will come to the polls and at least vote for that Proposition 1.
And Proposition 4 gives a similar tax exemption, but for certain disabled veterans. Tell us more about that.
Well, we have had great strides in survival rates of those injured in the battlefield. Injuries beforehand that would have been fatalities are now, through the technology and modern medicine, those soldiers are able to survive. But they do so with lifelong disabilities. In fact, here in San Antonio, we have the Center for the Intrepid and the wonderful facilities at San Antonio Medical Military Command. Those folks stay here years, and they have these wounded warriors, or what we like to call them, warriors in transition, now have lifelong disabilities. There are so many great faith-based and other not-for-profits that help our wounded soldiers by retrofitting a home or giving them a home that is specially retrofitted and made for their particular disability. And again, because of my contacts with the veteran community, there were some veterans that were losing these homes, not because they didn't want them, but because they couldn't afford the property taxes. So what this constitutional amendment does is to make sure that those folks who have been donated a home by a not-for-profit, that they don't pay the property tax at a level of their disability. So if you're 100% disabled, that 100% of the property tax of this donated home is exempted. If you're 70% disabled, then it would be 70% of the property tax of a donated home exempted. Again, the first one is in recognition of those surviving spouses of killed in action. And then proposition number 4 is to give a break to those wounded warriors who have these new donated retrofitted homes.
Leticia Vandeput is a state senator from San Antonio. She is supporting Props 1 and 4. Early voting begins on Monday. Election day is November the 5th. The Texas economy is again getting praise from the national media, and in the latest issue of Time magazine, Texas is hailed as the future by economist Tyler Cowen.
America is a country where inequality is rising, and that means it's harder for a lot of people to make ends meet. So they want to move to states where there are relatively low housing and rental costs, where there's a pretty good record of job creation, a lot of open space, and a fair amount of opportunity. That's the economy of Texas in a nutshell.
Texas also rising poverty, low wages, schools aren't that good for many parts of the state. We're seeing drought conditions continuing to get worse, and that's taking away jobs?
Well, a lot of that is a sign of how powerful the Texas economy is. So if you have drought conditions and people still want to move to your state, that's showing the other draws are pretty strong. Poverty rates are rising, but again, keep in mind, why is that? It's in part because Texas is a relatively good place for poor people to live. So it's not about the rate, it's about the question, are you helping the poor people who come to move to Texas?
Now, you've written a book called Average is Over, and some people have described the book as a gloomy forecast for the future, and in which they emphasizes a system of privilege and hyper-meritocracy. Is that where you see Texas is already on the path to that?
Well, I don't think that's a good description of the book. I think it's simply a fact that inequality is going up, and there are some things we could do to ameliorate that, but we're not going to stop it. So we need to look which places have managed to adjust to that better than other places, and I think actually Texas is one of those. So I think more of the United States should be like Texas in the sense that in Houston, living in Houston is still relatively affordable. That makes a big difference.
Are you recommending that other states copy Texas, and what do they need to copy?
Well, I don't think copy is exactly the right word. But the idea of having a relatively light regulation, relatively low tax, and most of all, deregulate building. San Francisco should be more like Houston. It should be a cheaper place to live. New York City should be the same way. That's the single biggest thing we could do to make inequality and poverty more bearable.
California is now boasting that they have conquered their economic woes and they're on the upswing and that other states should learn from them.
Well, California has a somewhat less bad budget position than they did, say, 3 years ago, but their long-term fiscal stance is still not very good when you take pensions into account. They've done a little bit better, but if you look at the data, you find people are leaving California and moving to Texas. If you look at the poverty rate adjusting for the cost of living, it's lower in Texas than in California.
If you look at where the jobs are in Texas, in Midland, Odessa has the lowest unemployment in the nation. We're also seeing great job growth in South Texas where the Eagle Ford Shale is. These are all areas that are rich in oil, and we're seeing great oil production and fracking happening. So is the secret to Texas's success is have oil?
Keep in mind, early Texas oil was very big, and more recently oil has become big again. But a lot of the more positive features of the Texan economy were also there in periods where oil was less important. So I would say oil is just one factor.
So is it just that Texas, in comparison to other states, looks attractive, or is it that Texas as a whole on itself is doing it right?
As you mentioned in one of your earlier comments, Texas is an imperfect state. One big problem is education. The systems aren't good enough. They're in the middle of the pack. Spending on education per child is relatively low. Those are real problems. But in a few key areas, Texas seems to be getting some things right, and it's passing a market test, as you see reflected in migration.
Tyler Cowan is a professor of economics at George Mason University. He wrote the cover story for Time magazine highlighting Texas. He is also the author of the book Average is Over. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can comment on our website at tpr.org. That's also where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can listen to us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.